You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Hour two on this Tuesday, Dan and the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show. Spent a lot of time first hour talking about the Steelers losing to Washington last night, 23-17, as the perfect season comes to an end. Alex Smith now 3-1 as the starter this season. Bills quietly handled the 49ers 34-24 in the nightcap. Tonight, the Ravens, 8-point favorites against the Cowboys. And you can't sit here and say, well, the Cowboys have no chance. They do, because we didn't give the Giants a chance in Seattle, and you probably didn't give Washington a chance in Pittsburgh last night. Here's Mike Tomlin after the loss last night.
They made the significant plays tonight, and we didn't, particularly in the second half. And I thought that was the difference in the game, particularly the weighty downs. We didn't win enough possession down football tonight. Examples of it were littered throughout. I thought that touchdown drive to start the second half when we had them 3rd and 14 and it hit a perimeter screen for a significant gain and moved the chains, kind of started the ball rolling in the wrong way, if you will. You know, we were down in the red area twice and we went for it on 4th down and didn't convert either. So possession down ball was heavy in this football game, and we paid the consequences of it, a failure in it, such as life in our game.
Well, also, 7 drop passes. You get stopped at the 1-yard line 5 times without a point. You get called for defensive holding inside the 10, and that's why you lose this game. You allow Washington to hang in there. As for the nightcap, Josh Allen, that was a great coming out party. You know, you have a couple more games in prime time. You're going to have a Sunday night game against the Steelers. You have another Monday night game against the Patriots. That game last night, the Monday night game, and you got to see him with 4 touchdown passes in a game for the 2nd time this season. And 40 passes last night, hit 3 times, was, I think, sacked just once. And that was an impressive performance by the Buffalo Bills, who are now 9-3. Phone calls are always welcome, 877-3DP-SHOW. Email address, dp@danpatrick.com. One of the Heisman favorites, in fact, he might be number 2 on the list, Mac Jones, the Alabama quarterback, will join us coming up in about 15 minutes from now. I believe I've found the one person who is going to defend Greg Williams and that defensive call. And Steve Palazzolo will join us coming up in a little bit here from Pro Football Focus. McLovin, update the poll results if you can.
Okay, you can pick one quarterback who's under 25. Joe Burrow has a slight lead over Josh Allen. Lamar Jackson down at 1%.
Yeah, and I understand that. I think Joe Burrow, with what he did, how he was doing it with the Bengals, you know, deserves a nod, because he knew he was going to throw 40 times and he was going to get hit probably 10 to 15 times every single game. Caught up to them in that philosophy there, but I like what I saw with Joe Burrow. If you say Joe Burrow is going to be healthy, all said and done, then, you know, I certainly would love him to be my franchise quarterback. Let's put it that way. We talked a little bit yesterday about what went on with the Raiders and the Raiders defensive call, or the offensive call, against what the Jets were doing defensively. And Greg Williams with in Greg Williams fashion, sending an all out blitz. And Derek Carr came up with the throw, single coverage on a undrafted, you know, cornerback, Lamar Jackson, and Henry Ruggs made him pay for it. And I kept thinking, okay, is somebody going to defend what Greg Williams did? This is what Greg Williams does. And in that moment, against Derek Carr, you send everybody there. Our good buddy from Pro Football Focus, senior analyst Steve Palazzolo, joining us on the program. Are you going to be the one who defends Greg Williams in that moment, Steve?
Somewhat. I mean, I never thought I'd be a Greg Williams defender, but here's my thing with it. It's not as egregious maybe as people are saying. That's my biggest takeaway from this thing. Yes, it's what Greg Williams does. He likes to put pressure. But I look at it, the general takeaway is, well, he's tanking. It got called in. It's a tank job. It looks completely different from what people normally do. I really think Greg Williams, first off, it's in his nature. He would blitz his mom if she was out there, right? But he likes to attack at those times, and it's the way he was handling Derek Carr during that game. You know, there was a 4th and 8, you know, a few plays before where he went all out. It didn't work for him, right? But Derek Carr was bad against the blitz in this game. He was 0 for 6 throwing the ball down the field against the blitz. He was fidgety in the pocket. He was throwing off balance. It essentially forced Derek Carr and the Raiders to execute, and they did. It's risky for sure, but you're putting the pressure on them to react quickly And when you bring that many people, you can't buy time. When you look at Hail Marys, the Aaron Rodgers one against the Cardinals, the quarterback generally has to buy time. And I think you just have to give Derek Carr a ton of credit. After he was fidgeting in the pocket the whole game, he stepped up. He found your job as a quarterback against the zero blitz is to find a way to throw it. Mahomes likes to retreat. Some guys roll out. Wilson retreats. Derek Carr stepped up, found the one place where he could throw the ball from the pocket and executed and made a great play. It's just not as egregious of a play call, I think, as everybody's making it out to be.
Well, here's my problem with it, Steve. You can send seven or eight guys if you want to, but my secondary has to know a couple of things. Don't bite on a double move and nobody gets behind you. And I said I would fire Greg Williams just for that. You can send your seven guys. You want to put pressure on Carr. I understand it. That's your style. But my secondary bit on a double move, and they had nobody over the top, and Ruggs was able to beat them deep. That, to me, is inexcusable for a guy who has as many years on the job as Greg Williams does.
I mean, I would rather have one more safety back. I do think that the execution, it's tough to put this on Lamar Jackson on an island, right? The cornerback, not the quarterback. It's tough to put it on the corners who are sitting on an island, or Marcus May on the previous one who was on an island and the 4th and 8, he had to grab Darren Waller. But I do think that the execution of the play wasn't great. I think it's obvious, you know, you've got essentially one play to defend. You have to not let anything get behind you. There was also what people were calling a spy, you know, somebody spying Derek Carr. That was more just that guy was in man coverage. And once the Raiders max protected, he was just, you know, he should have been an add-on blitzer. And I think if he executed that properly, the spot where Derek Carr was stepping up into the pocket, there's a jet there. And so I think the execution of the play, while risky, was a big part of it as well.
Do we know how good Sam Darnold is? What's Pro Football's focus, the assessment of Sam Darnold moving forward?
I try to go back to the preseason takes. I think I said it on this show, too, that we won't actually learn a ton about Sam Darnold, at least statistically. He's going to come out of the season based off their situation and not look that great, right? The offensive line still has issues. The playmakers, not only did they have question marks coming in, but they've been hurt the entire season. But you just wanted to see a throw-for-throw improvement from Sam Darnold. And we just haven't seen that. We just have not seen a lot of the stuff that he showed at USC. You know, at USC, he was, as a redshirt, his best season was his redshirt freshman year. And he looked like he was just so far beyond his time, throwing with anticipation. And he had that fourth quarter magic and so many of the things that seem to translate at the NFL level. And we're not seeing that here. Decision-making, accuracy. The situation hasn't been great, but he hasn't been elevating that lesser supporting cast. So in year three, yeah, that's a huge concern for Darnold.
Okay, but how do you factor in a bad offensive line when you're assessing quarterback play?
I think there's enough plays to evaluate. You know, even against a bad offensive line, you're still in a clean pocket 65% of the time, 60% of the time. So, you know, it's just evaluating on a throw-by-throw basis and saying, yes, if things are better here, you'll have more of those clean pocket opportunities. But you still have to make those plays. And if you are under pressure, you know, Justin Herbert's been under pressure like crazy this year, and he's handled it really well. And I think what you've seen from Herbert is more of his arm talents taking over. It's really tough for him to sustain, Herbert, that play under pressure. But you're at least seeing those superstar types of glimpses. You just don't see enough of those, I don't think, from Sam Darnold. And here's the bottom line with quarterbacks. I think you're either a passenger or you're a conductor, right? You're either a guy that is leading the charge, that is carrying a bad offensive line or an average supporting cast, or you're a guy that needs everything to be pristine around you. So right now, Darnold at best is the guy that needs everything around him, and I think that is a big part of the evaluation going forward. Do you want to invest in a guy that everything needs to be perfect around just to get some production out of?
Is there a maturation process going on with Baker Mayfield that we should be aware of?
He's just, it's such a roller coaster ride, and we live in a roller coaster ride of an industry, right? Every Monday morning, we have to react to the thing we saw the previous day. And this year, on Monday mornings, I have reacted so negatively to stuff I've seen from Baker Mayfield. He doesn't throw passes with touch. He doesn't want to go through his reads. He's not progressing. He hates throwing from a clean pocket. And then all of a sudden, in recent weeks, he's improved in that area. So I do think there is an element to that. The system has been great. It's really tough to separate quarterback from system. I think the best way to do it is to hold up PFF grade against your general production numbers, whether it's passer rating or yards per attempt or any other number that you want. And so far this season, Baker Mayfield's stats have been better than his performance. But what we saw on Sunday, what we've seen at times in recent weeks, is the things they needed to improve upon. Just throwing a touch pass to Rashard Higgins for that 17-yard touchdown, fantastic. He wasn't doing that earlier in the year. He was playing like Brett Favre, just trying to throw 100-mile-an-hour laser beams all over the field. So just that, going through his progressions a little bit more, not vacating clean pockets, some of those things have improved in recent weeks. And when you combine that with how the Browns have helped them systematically, it bodes really well for the Browns moving forward.
Yeah, I just don't know what I'm getting. I think they have the blueprint to beat anybody in the AFC, including Kansas City, on the road because they run the football. They got a front four that can put pressure on the quarterback. I don't have to blitz. I got some skill position guys. It just comes down to Baker Mayfield, it feels like. And then I look at Buffalo. I don't know what to expect out of Josh Allen, but it feels like when he plays well, he plays really well. And you saw that last night. Where's the improvement with Josh Allen? Where have you seen it?
Yeah, I called him last night one of the streakiest quarterbacks, and Bills fans aren't happy with PFF because we didn't love Josh Allen coming out, but he has improved in so many areas. It starts with accuracy in the short area. This started last year. Passes up to 20 yards. You did not see this at Wyoming from Josh Allen. Just the ability to put the ball right on Cole Beasley's front number for catch and run opportunities. Those were passes he was airmailing in college. So I think his footwork and accuracy in the short area has been fantastic. And then last year, he was a disaster when trying to throw the ball down the field. And that's one of those things that tends to fluctuate. It depends a lot on the receivers that you have. And now we're seeing the combination of Allen's improvement plus what Buffalo's built around him, right? Having Stephon Diggs, having a rookie Gabriel Davis, having John Brown when he's healthy, guys that can stretch the field. Over time, you're just going to have more opportunities to create those chunk plays. And Allen has done that. So the combination of his improvement in the short game and what Buffalo has done to build an incredible offense around him. I also love their play calling, right? We see so many offensive coordinators try to protect their young quarterback by going run, pass, right? Yeah. And just they're in third and eight all the time. There are games where the Bills, this is very Belichickian, they said they did it against the Seahawks a few weeks ago. We can't run against the Seahawks, but we could pass. We're going to throw the ball 35 times before our running back even carries it five times. That is to the favor of the quarterback, putting him in advantageous situations, throwing on early downs. And this started last year with the Bills. They've put Allen in a great position to succeed.
If I look at Josh Allen, he had six more completions of 20 or more yards. So his total in the season is 48. That ties him with Aaron Rodgers for third most in the NFL. Only Mahomes and Deshaun Watson have completed more down the field passes to what you were saying. Carson Wentz, I thought maybe for confidence reasons, I'd sit him down and because what he was doing on the field was not helping him. And I want to see what I have in Jalen Hurts. I don't know if you can trade Carson Wentz, you know, with that big ticket price attached to him, but this is an exploratory time if I'm the Eagles. Like, who are we and where are we going and who's going to lead us here? Did you see enough? Like, what did you assess with Jalen Hurts in what we thought was mop-up time, but it became a little bit closer in that game against Green Bay?
Yeah, the Eagles are just in a really tough spot. It's one of those things, too. I loved the Jalen Hurts pick at the time because I'm all about just finding quarterbacks and quarterbacks that could be of value. I'm in agreement with you. I think it might be time for just a breather for Carson Wentz. And I think ultimately the Eagles are with it. They're tied to him over the next few years, unless, you know, they could pull off a miracle and flip him somewhere if that's what they decide to do. So his long-term mental health and physical, all that stuff is like the most important thing right now for the Eagles. At the same time, you can find out what you have in Jalen Hurts. He added a little bit of a spark. And I'll use the same thing about Hurts that I've said about Taysom Hill, about Kyler Murray. When you have that rushing ability, it just brings a higher floor to your offense. Jalen Hurts is not the most polished passer. He's not going to sit through and make good reads 40 times a game. But if you add 6, 8, 10 carries per game, it just raises your floor where you don't have to be as good of a passer. And Hurts is a solid passer. He can hit open throws. He showed that at Alabama, showed it at Oklahoma. So I'm intrigued by what I saw, and I think it's going to look a little bit different. You use him in the design running game. I think you maybe increase your Jalen Hurts value, but I think ultimately the Eagles are tied to Wentz, and they need him to get back to where he was in 2017 and 18.
Steve Palazzolo, Pro Football Focus senior analyst, and PFF is revealing a new product called PFF IQ for teams and agents that use PFF data in their aid to build a team, roster management. You got free agency coming up. Dak Prescott's leverage, coming off an injury, surgery, team's not performing well. So now what happens once these two sides get back together again? Are we talking franchise? Are we talking long-term?
I think they'll figure it out long term. The only place Dak has lost leverage, I think, with Dallas is that they might be picking in the top 10. And all of a sudden, you know, the Kyle Trasks of the world and the Zach Wilsons of the world have emerged. And it went from a 2 QB race at 1 and 2 with Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields. And all of a sudden, Mac Jones, too, who'll be on the show, right?
Yeah.
You have these other guys who are intriguing first round talents. And Dallas has that other option. I think Dak's leverage is strong, though, because if you look at his career, he's got 4+ seasons of action. I think in 2 of those seasons, he's looked like a top 10 quarterback. 2 seasons, he hasn't. This year, he was on his way to a third top 10 caliber season. When you have that top 10 caliber quarterback, you get him, you lock him up, and you live with that guy. I think that's what Dak has been these last couple of years. So I think the last football we've seen from Dak is so positive. Whether it's in Dallas or somewhere else, he's the hottest commodity in free agency. And we've seen teams that when you have the mid-tier quarterback, you just don't know what you're going to get. You could have a Kirk Cousins type season, which is nice right now. You could have a Matthew Stafford type season, which is inconsistent. I think Dak brings a level of consistency that the NFL teams are going to covet on the open market.
And I know Jerry needs to win now, wants to win now, and almost every owner wants to win now. But I wonder if they sat there and all of a sudden you did have Zach Wilson or Kyle Trask, Trey Lance, like you just, you know, does Jerry go, I could get that rookie quarterback contract and I could continue to fill my team with fat contracts here and get out from under Dak Prescott's $40 million a year. Do you think Jerry has the patience to be able to do that in a situation like this?
So that's the exact discussion I think they're going to have. And the exact thing, I think, when we sit down and we've built PFF IQ, which is this way of helping teams kind of make these decisions, we've realized, look, the rookie contract thing is great, but it's greater if you know that quarterback is going to be good. When it's Russell Wilson on a rookie contract or Dak on a rookie contract as a fourth rounder, that's one of the biggest steals in the NFL since 2016. If you know the guy's going to be good, that's fine. But there's inherent risk in a Zach Wilson, a Kyle Trask, Mac Jones, whoever it might be, because you've never seen him at the NFL level. There's something to the known commodity in Dak Prescott. I think ultimately that wins out, but the debate will be, rookie year contract in this great supporting cast compared to the Dak contract. I don't think the Dak level contract is as detrimental as people think it is if the quarterback is good. And I think he's proven that at $40 million or whatever that number is, he will be worth it.
Steve, always great to talk to you. We appreciate your insights. Thank you.
You got it. Thank you, Dan.
That's Steve Palmozzolo, one of the senior analysts there at Pro Football Focus. We'll take a break. Coming up, we'll talk to Mac Jones, the quarterback for Alabama. Sunday night, Ben Roethlisberger and the Steelers head to Buffalo to face the Bills, and the Bills pushing for their first divisional title in 25 years. Sunday night, 7 Eastern, only on NBC. We'll take a break, 19 after the hour here on the Dan Patrick Show. 1-800-FLOWERS, if you can't be there during Christmas time, this is a great substitute. 1-800-FLOWERS, the holiday flower tree, one of a kind, holiday arrangement. It fills even the smallest spaces with big holiday cheer, and you're going to love it. 1-800-FLOWERS, the holiday flower tree. Get 15% off. Perfect way to brighten your home or somebody else's home if you can't be there. The holiday flower tree, elegantly hand-designed, fragrant greenery, roses, mini carnations on there. You got a red bow on top, and it looks great. It's a one-of-a-kind gift and perfect for spreading joy in your home or the homes of your friends and family just in time for the holidays. Once again, 15% off this gorgeous 1-800-FLOWERS holiday flower tree. An amazing offer, but you have to hurry. The offer ends this Friday. Tried to get them to extend it longer. I got them to Friday. Get the gorgeous holiday flower tree, 15% off, 1-800-FLOWERS. 1-800-FLOWERS, you'll click on the radio icon, enter code Patrick. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. This program brought to you by the great folks, Mercedes-Benz Vans. Whether vans stop short, Mercedes-Benz Vans go far beyond. From their customization options, cutting-edge tech, five-star sales, service, financial support crew, Mercedes-Benz Vans are built, equipped, and engineered to be ready for anything. So go the extra mile by taking that all-important first step into an authorized dealership today. I've been saying the last 2 weeks the Heisman Trophy will probably be decided when Alabama faces Florida for the SEC title. Kyle Trask and Mac Jones look to be the two front runners there. Mac Jones, the Alabama quarterback, kind enough to join us on the program. I didn't realize this. It's Michael McCorkle Mac Jones. So when did, when did we go from Michael to Mac Jones?
Really just early on, like in lower school, I think my teacher, it was a substitute teacher, and she called out Michael Jones, and I kind of like looked around like, who's Michael Jones? And then sure enough, I was like, oh, well, just call me Mac. So it just stuck from there, I guess.
Who calls you Michael?
Really nobody, honestly. Like my parents are not, like they wouldn't say, hey, Michael, if they're mad at me. So it's always been Mac, and I guess just my legal name is Michael. So
how do you know when Coach Saban's mad at you?
Usually he just kind of says like, hey Mac, and then I know he's coming up to me to talk to me, and usually something follows with the lesson of what he's trying to teach me. So I mean, it happens, and he obviously coaches me hard, so I enjoy that.
What if you get a look but no words? What's that mean?
Words are coming.
so even if you get a look, you know words are eventually coming.
Yeah, it'll take a second. He'll just kind of be like, and then maybe, you know, tell me what he wants to say after he looks at me for a couple seconds.
What's your favorite Saban story?
I don't know if I have a great, like, one I can tell on here.
Josh Jacobs came on last year and said that Coach Saban likes to use the expression D's nuts.
Yeah.
Okay, so we already got that one, and then I did ask Coach Saban, and then he did verify that, yes, he has been known to say, how about D's nuts? So we've already established that, Mac. So we can go wherever you want to go with Coach Saban, and it feels like, look, you're a Heisman candidate. I mean, you're okay, all right? You won't get in trouble for this. I'll vouch for you.
I don't know about that, but...
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, we have fun out there and talk a little smack to each other, but I don't want to get into too many details.
Wait, you talk smack back to Coach?
What'd you say?
You talk smack back to Coach Saban?
Yeah, I mean, maybe he'll like say out the coverage in like a couple of our drills, and I'll be like, oh, cover two, Coach? And he's like, yeah, but you still can't beat it or something like that. Because I know most of the defense's calls, so I like to listen, and I'll be like, oh, is that two-man, Coach? Is that cover seven? And we kind of just mess around in that way.
How did you end up at Alabama?
Really just in the recruiting process. Coach Saban, you know, invited me to come up to camp, and I'd never really been to Alabama, and my family, my dad actually drove pretty much overnight to get me a chance to throw in front of the coaches at a camp. And I just kind of fell in love with Coach Saban and his process, and talking with him, you know, being up here at that camp really just sold me on Alabama.
Yeah. But weren't you in a camp where Tua was there and you knew Tua was going to Alabama, but you still decided that you were going, like, you didn't see something that you said, I can't compete with Tua? Because if he's going to be the star, you know, sometimes you look at somebody and go, maybe I should go to Kentucky instead.
Yeah. I mean, really just came back to just the focus on how can I get better and what school will give me the best chance to improve. So I didn't really even look at it like that. And Tua is obviously committed before me, and I committed after Tua, and I understood what type of player Tua was. But at the end of the day, I just, like I said, Coach Saban kind of just sold me on how he had a plan for me to get better and develop as a, in the weight room, in the film room, all that stuff. And when you're coming here and playing against the, practicing against the best players in the whole country, then you're going to get better. And I knew eventually at some point I was going to get a shot. So I just had to be prepared for that moment.
Yeah, but Mac, if I told you 3 years ago you're going to be a Heisman finalist, what would you have said?
I don't really know. I just try and prepare every day for that moment. And I grew up watching a bunch of great quarterbacks, and to be in the talks of that is really awesome. But at the end of the day, like I always say this, it's more about my teammates and just winning the game and all that stuff will take care of itself, because if you focus on the wrong things and results, then you're not going to end up where you want to be.
All right, you grew up in Florida, right?
Yes.
Okay, so give me the good quarterbacks that you saw, probably not in Florida. So who were you professionally? Who were you watching and saying that you know, that's somebody I want to model my game after?
Yeah, I mean, I like watching all NFL football, but I've always liked watching like Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning, people like that growing up. But really, I don't have like a favorite quarterback or anything like that. And obviously, I was in Florida, like you said, so I was a big Tebow fan while he was in college. So just watching him play was really cool too.
Have you met Tebow?
Yeah, we've talked before.
How did that go?
It's good. I mean, I wish I could talk to him more. I'm sure this season, hopefully I'll be able to talk to him at one of these media things or something. But like I said, I saw him play in high school and saw him in college, and now obviously he's doing great things.
How many touchdowns do you think I could throw in a game with your wide receivers? Okay, when everybody's healthy.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, let's just be honest, Mac. I know you've had a great year, but
yeah.
I mean, I'm looking at the guys you're throwing to.
Yeah.
I gotta believe I could get maybe one or two touchdowns in a game.
Like, oh, easily.
Like against, let's say I'm facing Ole Miss or Mississippi State. Like, I should be able to get one or two, right?
Yeah, I mean, our guys are making plays and they're getting open. So I'd assume if you can throw it past 10 yards, you'll at least give them a chance.
Oh, I can sling it. I can give you probably 50 yards if I need to.
There you go.
And those guys are wide open too. I mean,
yeah, they are wide open. I mean, that's their job. And, you know, it is hard to hit wide open receivers.
Wait a minute. Okay, hold on. It's hard to hit wide open receivers.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Explain.
So I'm sure you've heard this before, but it's the hardest catch to make for sure, because
yes,
you know, you're wide open, you get a little more like antsy and things like that. And honestly, when someone's getting covered, it's like more of a challenge to put it in the right spot. But at the same time, there's all that field that you can miss and it's just one guy you're looking at. So, I mean, there's a good amount of margin for error, like popular to what people would probably think.
Devontae Smith's pretty good there, Mac.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Like, does he ever amaze you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he, like, not only with the plays he makes, but, like, sometimes he'll point out the blitzes on the defense. And that's something that really impresses me about Smitty, whether that's in practice or even in the games. He'd be like, hey, safety blitz right here. And then I'll the player, tell him what to run. So that's pretty impressive for a receiver to be able to tell me.
Yeah, and he's, you know, there are times when it feels like he's the best player on the field. That game against LSU, I mean, it just felt like he was the best player out there.
Oh, yeah, he definitely is. Like I say this all the time, he's one of the best players in the country, and he works really hard, and he's been doing that for the past 4 years at Alabama, and his highlight reel is insane, and I just love throwing him the ball because if it's one-on-one, he'll make the play, and he just has a lot of faith in me, so I appreciate him for that.
How much did the smack talk from LSU the previous year factor in this past weekend against LSU?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, we definitely addressed it, but at the same time, it was a new year, and like we obviously didn't feel great. We lost the game, you know, a close game last year, but we definitely addressed that in our player-only meeting about how we just wanted to go out there and get a chance to show LSU what the new team looked like. And we definitely played really well as a team, so we were excited about that.
Can you hear Coach O during a game?
No, I couldn't hear him.
Oh, okay.
During the game.
Yeah, with that voice, I thought that you might be able to hear him.
No.
Have you graduated?
Yeah, so I already graduated last year from my undergrad in communication studies, and then I'm actually graduating this Saturday again with my master's in sport hospitality.
What do you want to do?
That's a great question. I really don't know. Like, people always ask me that, but maybe, I don't know, become like a sports broadcaster or just something around sports, because I love sports a lot. And, you know, I just want to play as long as I can, because that's always just been a part of my life.
But how did you learn to speak Chinese?
So I took that class in high school, and we just started my freshman year. I guess me and some of my buddies We just kind of spoke it with our teacher, and she taught us everything we knew. And I kind of lost a lot of it, but I'm getting it back. I guess I have to study up on it.
Maybe you don't want to lose that. You want to be able to speak a couple of languages. How do you say roll tide in Mandarin Chinese?
usually they just they'll use slang words, but I mean, I can say I play football at Alabama.
Okay.
Or Gan Lan Chio Zai Alabama. So that would be I play football at Alabama.
Yeah, you need roll tide. You need roll tide in Chinese.
I'll text my teacher and ask her.
Do you do audibles? Do you have fun names for audibles?
Not really.
So you don't get to go to line of scrimmage and say, yell out something that would be funny, or, we see the pro quarterbacks doing this.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, most of the times when we say something, it actually means something for the offensive line or the receivers. So there's not a lot of dummy, verbal things that I can do, but there's some dummy signals and things like that that we use. And a lot of times it's just a play is called and I can check it, or Coach Sark, our offensive coordinator, will look with me and we'll figure out what play we want to get next.
Hmm. You got Arkansas coming up.
Yes.
You can't mail it in against Arkansas.
Yeah. Those guys, they're playing a lot better.
They are.
And like we said, in our team meeting, they've lost a bunch of games, but by a very small margin, and their record really doesn't show how good of a team they are.
Mac, last weekend, 385 yards, 4 touchdowns on the season, 27 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, just over 3,000 yards. It'll be fun here. Big chase there with you and Kyle Trask. I don't know if anybody else is going to factor in. What do you do better than Kyle Trask?
I don't think I do anything really different or better than Kyle. I actually really like watching Kyle. I actually told him last year, when we're watching film on teams, a lot of times Florida was the team that we were watching the defense against. And I just liked watching Kyle play. And I actually texted him or shot him an Instagram message and just told him that I really enjoyed how he plays football and how he plays quarterback. And you can tell he's just a really good player and he's doing a great job down there.
You got to do better than that, talking smack. I mean, come on. You can't be. Come on, Mac. Come on. No. You got to say something.
No.
All right. Well, hopefully you'll let your play do all the talking when you guys go head-to-head there. But congrats on the season, and we appreciate your time. Thank you, Mac.
Okay, thank you. Have a nice day.
That's Mac Jones. Don't call him Michael. It's Mac Jones. By the way, the Duttons are back. Yellowstone Season 3, Kevin Costner streaming now exclusively on Peacock. Whether you're a newcomer or not to the ranch, you can stream all 3 seasons. Yes, Paulie?
And I don't necessarily believe in reincarnation, but if there is, I would like to come back as the Alabama quarterback majoring in sports hospitality. That would be my dream. I mean, that's it. That'd be as good as it gets.
Well, as long as I have those receivers to throw to.
Yes.
And I was sort of kidding, but I do believe if you said, hey, just take a 5-step drop or we're going to put you in the gun and you just throw the ball to Devontae Smith. I'm going to guess I might be able to get something out of it. I don't mean to take anything away from Mac Jones. By the way, if his name was Michael Jones, would it mean the same? He's Mac Jones. That sounds a little bit more like the SEC. Mac Jones. Very polite kid. And, I'm looking at the other schools that they were recruiting him, and not necessarily powerhouses like Alabama. And I think he was a 3-star recruit. And then you go there and you're sort of saying, well, 2 is their quarterback, and next thing you know, you get your chance, and he's made the most of it. Yeah, Paulie?
I looked up Alabama's major of sport hospitality, Dan. Hospitality law, you have to take sport properties and venue management.
Ooh, that doesn't sound like fun.
Yeah, these sound real.
Yeah.
Sports sales and entrepreneurship, hospitality operations analysis. These sounds heavy.
Yeah, McLovin.
That all sums up, basically, you have to make sure there's enough Diet Coke in the suite.
That's a class.
You got to get ice. Make sure you have ice for everybody.
It's not very rigorous academically. I mean, it's not exactly a biomechanical engineering.
Well, he didn't say it was. Paulie made it seem like there's a little bit more to it. That, I don't think Max said, oh, my gosh, I have no time for football. I study so much. Yes,
he's a gun.
Man, the older I get and the more I hear about this stuff, the more I realize just how stupid I was failing out of college. What the hell was I doing?
Well, nothing. But
Well, no, actually, I know exactly what I was doing. I know exactly why I failed out. But damn it. Couldn't somebody just give me a heads up that you could, like, go into that thing? Gosh.
It is hard to fail out of college, though. Like, you almost have to try.
Well, no, exactly. It's like you just you don't try.
You don't try.
Right. You don't try to stay.
But therefore, you're trying. By not trying, it feels like you're trying to flunk out of something like that.
Yeah.
I didn't try to flunk out of college, but I made a pretty good run at it. Yes, McLevin.
I'm still laughing at Ian Book saying he's taking three Irish study classes, non-degree. Like, what's the point? Who are we kidding here?
But right, have to go because to class. He's like, oh, because we were going to Dublin, so yeah. I took a bunch of Irish classes.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, I'm studying a language. I'm studying Irish is what I'm doing. I'm going to be studying that for a couple of semesters because we're going to Dublin. All righty. Take a break. Phone call's coming up. And coming up next hour, we're going to check in with the Michigan Wolverines. I don't know what their team is going to look like. It doesn't look good when they're healthy, but they are decimated. And the big question I have is Jim Harbaugh going to get a contract extension? Because that's the most important part of this moving forward, telling these recruits that I'm going to be here for a while. And we'll kind of sort out fact and fiction here with Jim Harbaugh. Does he want to go back to the NFL? Is Michigan still going to be all in with him? And what kind of team can we expect to see this weekend when they face Ohio State? Back after this. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. So after last night's games, this is how the playoff picture looks. Steelers still win the tiebreaker with the Chiefs based on conference records, still in the lead for home field advantage. Chiefs have clinched a playoff berth. Bills, one game lead in the AFC East. Titans own the division record tiebreaker over Indy. The Browns at 9-3 closing in on return to the playoffs. Dolphins still have a chance, obviously, in the East. And the Colts still have a chance in the AFC South. As far as the NFC, the Saints, first team to clinch a playoff berth in the NFC. Packers, big lead in the NFC North. Rams, head-to-head tiebreaker over the Seahawks. Giants lead the East thanks to head-to-head tiebreaker with Washington. Seahawks, first place in the wild card race. Buccaneers, three games behind the Saints in the NFC South. And the Vikings have the tiebreaker over the Cardinals. So that is the playoff picture. And then you have Baltimore going into the game against Dallas tonight. Dallas is an 8-point underdog. This in from Rick Goslin, and this has to do with NFL road teams. I mentioned yesterday, double-digit deficits aren't a big deal in the NFL this season. The COVID impact on the NFL there, if any fans in the stands, there's no 12th man at Seattle, no decibel splitting roar at Arrowhead, no longer a home field advantage in the NFL. Road teams have a 96-94-1 record this season, including a 10-4 mark last weekend. That home field advantage, and we see this with the NFL, and when you don't have that, and then I wonder how that will impact the playoffs. And if some of these teams are going to be lobbying to get more fans in the stands come playoff time. Jeff in Detroit. Hi, Jeff. What's on your mind?
What up, though, Dan? I just wanted to tell you how I became a Lions fan. See, it was 2 years old. Daddy brought home a lot. I'm just kidding. It's funny that you say that because, in all honesty, you go right into my question. I'm wondering, with the COVID, emptying out the stadiums, having limited seating or none at all, a false start penalties as well as offside penalties, are they down this year at this point and compared to years past? Are they up or, like, you know, where they're supposed to be? Because not having that home field advantage is pretty big, especially like Seattle, Green Bay, KC, those domes, they were always good for like a false start penalty or an offside penalty.
Yeah, twice a game. Let me check with Ethan at Stats Inc. See if he's got some numbers on that false start penalties here. James in Virginia. Hi, James. Congratulations on the win last night.
Oh, I'm just a fan, brother. But I wish I could say congratulations. It is exciting to watch, man. We are Washington, man. you know, I felt like they were in a good spot going into the game, having 11 days off in the Pittsburgh playing on Wednesday. But when Pittsburgh jumped out to that 14-0 lead, I looked at my girl and I was like, babe, why can't they just play good? She's like, you knew this was going to happen. And I was like, no, baby, they need to play good. And slowly but surely, man, resilience is the word I took away from that game. And quietly, man, they're only a game out of a wild card berth, man. I don't know what's going to happen. For the first time in a while, man, Washington is playing meaningful games in December, man. And Alex Smith, I mean, that guy, man, I can't see why they don't bring him back next year, man. We'll see what happens, man. Thank you for taking my call, man. We all Washington. Have a great day,
guys. All right. Thank you, James. They've already paid Alex Smith. If you can bring him back, and this might be the third team that he's on where he's basically trying to help his successor take over. Saw this in San Francisco. Saw this in Kansas City. And I would assume we would see that in Washington. Yes, McLevin.
Is he any less likable now because he cheated right before the half? And we all know he cheated by taking the ball away to stop the clock.
I don't know. Okay, cheating or gamesmanship, McLovin? There's a little bit of a difference there. Steelers threw the ball 53 times last night. They ran the ball 14 times. Didn't do well at the goal line. Having James Conner back, you hope, would change that offense because you're not going to win. That team, I don't think, can win throwing 50 times in a game. Yeah, Paul.
3 weeks ago, the Washington football team had the fourth pick of the draft. Right now, they have the 11th pick of the draft. They may be, as they're going right now, they may shut out of the quarterback situation.
Yeah, and you would want that, except for what is our future? You know, Alex Smith at his age, and certainly with those surgeries, injuries, and then, you know, as you move forward, it's a young team with a older quarterback there. But can you do anything? Do you bring in what do you do with Dwayne Haskins? That's what I want to know. The Cincinnati-Tulsa game has been canceled because of COVID-19 situation at Cincinnati. This, according to Pat Forty from Sports Illustrated. So that's really bad news for Cincinnati because not that they had any hope to get into the Final Four, but if I'm Cincinnati, call Coastal Carolina. Call BYU. Maybe you get somebody who will play you there. But the game against Tulsa has been canceled because of the COVID-19 situation there. David in Ohio joins us. Hi, David. What's on your mind?
Hey there, DP.
Hey, David.
Nice segue from Cincinnati to Cincinnati. So last night's game, Pittsburgh-Washington, I feel like there was a tie-in with college football. So upcoming, we got Kyle Trask possibly playing Mac Jones for the Heisman Trophy. Last night's game, Washington-Pittsburgh, Alex Smith possibly won comeback player of the year.
All right. Well, thank you, David. I don't know who else. I know that people tried to put Ben Roethlisberger in that race for comeback player of the year. Not that you want to win it, because normally you got to come back from something. I would guess this would be unanimous with Alex Smith with what he's been able to do and winning football games as well. I thought he was going to do a ceremonial one snap, take a knee, and his career would be over. He's got designs on winning that division. Final hour coming up.